Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
A new bill in the House would take a novel approach to increasing the numbers of women and minorities in high-ranking positions in the Defense Department, both uniformed and civilian. It would use grants to fund organizations devoted to leadership development and mentoring. Joining me with more, the sponsor of the bill, Representative Mark Vesey of Texas. Representative Vesey, good to have you on.
How are you doing, Tom?
All right. Good to have you on. And so tell us about this bill. Right now, of course, everything's in recess, so nothing is happening with it. But what would it do?
Right. What this bill does is that it creates the initiative to increase overall diversity in civilian and military leadership. One of the concerns that I have is that, for a long time now, the military has been the leader when it comes to diversity in the workplace. The military has always outperformed the private sector when it comes to diversity in their leadership ranks, whether it was in enlisted or in the officer's corps. And that has slipped a little bit now, with African-Americans only comprising about 8% of the officer's corps and Hispanics representing about 5% of the officer's corps. And so I think that it's really important that we increase our diversity with African-Americans and Latinos, but then also, think about, too, how we're going to grow, particularly as we become more of a global world that we live in. Like, how do we make sure that we have diversity, not only with blacks and Latinos, but even, people that speak, different languages and dialects, that we need to be able to combat some of the things that are happening around the world?
So how would this bill accomplish that?
The way how this bill accomplished that is that it works to complement Ash Carter's Force of the Future initiative that he has going on right now. The grant program will support best practices such as online interactive workshops for targeted populations, interagency mentoring programs, undergraduate and graduate internships programs, and even a K-12 pipeline to the military program that will look for the top talent within minority communities that will help individuals be able to go into the military and be successful.
And who do you envision as the possible recipients of these grants?
The possible recipients of the grants would be the individuals, obviously, that would benefit from the grant. The community would be the top recipients of the grant, obviously. I can tell you right now that there is, I would say, a lack of full understanding in the community on what the military can offer. I think there's been a huge gap from the baby boomers, particularly in African-American and Latino communities, that saw the military as a vehicle to be able to leave the situation that they're in, versus, Generation X and millennials, who necessarily didn't pick up that message for whatever reason, or another, because the baby boomers wanted different opportunities for the Gen X and millennials, and so maybe that wasn't necessarily passed down from baby boomers, but there certainly is a lack of knowledge and understanding in the community about what the military can offer. And so hopefully, with the grants, we'll be able to, reach some of these communities and be able to foster a good sort of dialogue and back and forth with the military to these various communities to get more people interested in joining the military in the first place, because I think that that it needs to happen. And again, because the military has been really, when you think about it, they've really been the model. I mean, name a place in the private sector where you can go where you'll see, the officers of the company be reflective of the overall diversity in the population. It's almost unheard of, and the military has always been so good in that area. But again, with the slips that we've seen, 8%, 5%, we know that we can do a lot better than that. And we need to, and I think the military is up to it.
When you say the community, though, you mean groups in the community that have contact with people locally that might be good military candidates?
Right. Yes, absolutely. There are people that work within education, to reach young people and students that are thinking about which direction they're going to go to, that can definitely be able to work and be a part of that pipeline as part of the Diversity in Leadership Act to get young people interested in. While I think that the military can accomplish a lot of this, I think that by having partnerships with people and organizations within the community, that they could probably be more successful.
We're speaking with Congressman Mark Vesey, who represents the 33rd District in Texas. And what about ROTC? Could that have some tie-in under your bill?
Yeah, absolutely. ROTC could certainly have a tie-in. And, you know, ROTC is another area that a lot of young people just aren't aware of or know about and know that that option is out there. The young people that are in high school, that are in ROTC, they know about college ROTC programs, but a lot of the other student populations really don't know about that option. And, you know, being able to work with ROTC programs and bring them into the fold on this would absolutely be a great way to go. When I was in the state legislature, I actually worked to get legislation passed that would allow each state representative to give a $10,000 a year scholarship to one person in their state legislative districts, to any state university in Texas, for a kid that wanted to, you know, go through the college ROTC program. And I'm a big believer in that, and I believe that they would fit very easily into a diversity and leadership bill.
And what is your strategy for this bill? Do you think it could stand alone, or maybe getting folded into the 2018 defense authorization piece?
That would be very nice to be able to get it folded into the NDAA, or, you know, be able to also be a standalone bill. I think that this is a bill that we should be able to get bipartisan support on. I think that everyone understands the value of diversity in the military and how the military has been a model, regardless of if you're Republican or Democrat, how the military has really been a model when it comes to equal opportunity, when it comes to diversity. And we want to, again, we want to keep it that way. We want to see if we can, you know, move that 8% up for African Americans, for instance, to be more reflective of the overall African American population, and the same within the you know, Latino population. Right now, again, 5% of the officer corps for Latinos, but 15% of the U.S. population, and I think that we can get there. And again, we have to get there. And then, you know, when I think about a place like Nigeria, for instance, you look at Boko Haram. And the various dialects that are spoken in Nigeria and many of those villages that are very remote outposts and remote villages, you have to have people of a variety of different, you know, that understand the different dialects that are spoken in order to gain intelligence and information. You know, so the citizens that we have here, again, that may have familiarity, that are, you know, first-generation Nigerian-Americans, so which would make them, you know, first-generation Black Americans, how we recruit different people like that in order to be a part of our armed services so we can be more effective, more efficient in dealing with threats like that, you know, also needs to be, you know, a part of this diversity push.
And while we have you, Congress is on recess until around Labor Day, and then you have that period of being in session before the election. What do you see happening in September?
It's going to be interesting to see what happens in September. I don't think that, quite frankly, that a lot's going to get done in September. Will be nice, but I think that with the presidential election underway, that Republicans are going to want to try to get out of town with as little damage as possible. There's already talk of us maybe eliminating one of the weeks in September. I think that would be a huge mistake with Zika and other things that we need to be able to accomplish, that the American public expects us to accomplish. There does seem to be a desire to just try to hurry up and get out of town. But again, I think that would be a very big mistake.
Mark Vesey is a Democrat representing the 33rd District in Texas. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate it.
You can read his bill and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
Pentagon Solutions will return after these messages. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
It may be having problems getting built and perfected, but the littoral combat ship is going to be an important part of the Navy's fleet. And since that fleet is about half the size it was during the Cold War, each ship needs to have solid punching power. That's according to retired Navy Commander Jim Feldkamp, now an adjunct professor at George Mason University. He joins me now. Mr. Feldkamp, great to have you on.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You're arguing, in fact, you have a couple of published pieces on this, that there is off-the-shelf technology that has that punching power that could easily be put on top of these forthcoming ships. I guess there's a couple of them already in the fleet.
Right. The LCS, Littoral Combat Ship, is going through its trials right now. Two different companies are competing, I guess, to get the contract from the U.S. government. But one of the opportunities about the LCS is the modular design. And with that, you can be able to bolt on different suites to change the mission of the ship. And one of those things is what they call off-the-shelf technology is the naval strike missile, which is a Norwegian naval strike missile, actually. And it's a fifth-generation missile, and it's already gone through, and the Norwegians and the Polish use it in their Navy. And it's a sea-skimming missile, fifth generation, can fly around land masses and everything and strike your opponents at different aspects, different ways. And so it's a very good opportunity to buy tried-and-true weapon systems, very inexpensive in relation to the other stuff that we tend to put on. And, you know, we're always enamored with the technology of the day. But I think it's a very good opportunity to develop these LCSs to make modular designs to be able to have a lower procurement cost and develop and have more ships in the commons, I guess, is the best way to put it.
I guess I'm surprised that maybe other people are that Norway, first of all, has a Navy with that kind of capability of striking beyond the horizon and that they've got an industry that can build this type of weapon.
Yeah. Well, wonders never cease. But I guess that's, you know, if you just go out there and you look, because, you know, with 70 nations right now have over 75,000 anti-ship missiles, we got to start looking at a different way to project our power. And one of those things, like I said, is the LCS. And the more opportunities you have to create open architecture to be able to put different suites or modules on these ships to change their mission, their tactics from sea service or surface warfare to minesweeping or anti-submarine warfare, the opportunities are increased. And so with this, you know, a tried-and-true weapon system that we can put on an American ship will just enhance the strike capability of this ship.
Now, in the American arsenal that exists now and with the current typical supplier base, there's nothing like this particular missile?
No, nothing like it. I mean, the Harpoon is a good missile, but this is a generation beyond that. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I should say, is that, you know, we'll take anything we can, but what we want to do is we want to have the biggest punch we possibly can. We want to shoot, fight above our weight. And with this missile, the opportunity is there that we can bolt that on a relatively inexpensive price and then, you know, expand our capabilities, especially around the littoral waters that in the South China Sea. Because right now what we have is we have China just becoming more and more belligerent. And in the South China Sea, we have, $5 trillion worth of commerce coming through every year. And China's just now ignored what the Hague has mentioned, or the Hague came down on the competition, the mineral rights between Philippines and China. And so China's becoming very, very belligerent. And what we need to do is we need to, you know, have more of a presence out there. And and this LCS is a great opportunity because of the low draft. You can get through those shallow waters like the Spratly Islands and all those places, and just increase our ability to project power.
Now, the littoral combat ship is littoral, which means it's close to the shore in the way it operates.
Mm-hmm.
The South China Sea is enormous, and parts of it are deep. Do you see this as something that could be on a ship when it's close to the shore and fire either inland or over water to something else?
Oh, absolutely. Like I mentioned, it's, you know, fifth generation, so it can be a sea skimmer, it can fly around land masses. And what we're looking at is, you know, in the Spratly Islands, those archipelagos and all those places where the shallow draft, I mean, the water is pretty shallow, relatively speaking, so our capital ships can't get in there. But the LCS could, armed with this new missile, be able to work through those islands and add a lot more capabilities and provide more distributed lethality, so to speak, against our enemies. And so if we got in a shooting match or anything like that, the opportunity for us to attack from different angles would be increased.
We're speaking with Jim Feldkamp, retired Navy commander and former FBI special agent. He's now an adjunct professor at George Mason University. And getting to the procurement aspects of this, how used to this type of purchasing do you think the Navy really is to buy something off the shelf from another country to put on a strategic location like the top of a ship?
Well, I think it's a change of mindset, actually. I mean, we've had sequestration in the last several years, so this has really hampered our ability to modify our fleet. And so this is just an opportunity in which we can have a tried-and-true weapon system we can put on the LCS. Now, the LCS, like I said, look at it as like an F-150 truck, right? I mean, it's going to be a modular design, so you can design it for different missions that you want. And just by having this tried-and-true weapon system available, let's put it on. That's just a different philosophy. Instead of building everything from the ground up, let's start shopping around for the best price possible, because what we want to do is we want to increase our presence throughout the globe to ensure our adversaries don't take us as a sign of weakness, leading from behind, as it were, so we're always out there projecting power.
And what about the supply reliability in the case of buying it from a country like Norway? Seems to be a pretty stable nation.
Yeah, I would think it would be well, once again, I think the advantages outweigh the disadvantages, just for the fact that Norway is a stable nation. Norway has created this and has got a good procurement chain. I think it's going to be a great opportunity.
And what about China and Russia? Do they have access to the same technology or something from a competitor?
Well, that's a good question. I am sure ONI would know better than I, but you know, with Russia and China, they have been increasing their militaries and their navies. As a matter of fact, what is it that Russia is now building 8 new nuclear-powered missile cruisers? So they're seeing an advantage, or they're taking advantage of our sequestration and our reduction in our fleet to project their power. And so all of a sudden, we do see the rise of China, and we do see the rise of Russia, and we should be aware of that. And like I mentioned, the South China Sea, you know, China is building up these islands out of whole cloth, and they're trying to make the South China Sea into their internal lake. Well, $5 trillion of the world economy going through that commons, we have to ensure freedom of navigation and freedom of the seas. And so all these things, you know, combined, where we got to realize that our procurement has got to change. We got to start building these littoral combat ships just as a presence because of their, you know, shallow draft, high maneuverability, and the ability to change their mission.
And what about the integration of a foreign-made weapon system with the systems and the buses and the electronics already on board a U.S. ship?
Well, I think that's where they're testing it right now. They're out there testing the USS Freedom is out there working on that right now, the testing. And the first couple of tests, I think, have gone through pretty good. Like I said, you know, it's one of those change in philosophies, change in attitudes, change in mentality that we got to start looking outside the box in order to increase the opportunities for us to project power.
Jim Feldkamp is retired Navy commander and former FBI special agent, now an adjunct professor at George Mason University. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.